Hello, and welcome to our Children's Rights in Action podcast series. Here at Children's Parliament, we believe that all children should grow up in a world of love, happiness, and understanding. Our mission is to inspire greater awareness and understanding of the power of children's human rights, and to support the implementation of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, the UNCRC, into Scots law. We're really looking forward to sharing this with you through our conversations. Today, we want to focus on how we make children's rights real by sharing with you a conversation we've had with Bruce Adamson, Children and Young People's Commissioner for Scotland, and Denisha Kilo, National Childhood Bereavement Coordinator from Includem, to discuss the ways in which we can offer a children's rights-based approach to supporting a child through bereavement, and the impact that offering this approach can have.
Hi, I'm Bruce Adamson. I'm the Children and Young People's Commissioner of Scotland. I've got the best job in the world because it's my job to safeguard and promote the rights of everybody up to the age of 18 or up to 21 for care experienced young people. And so I'm really delighted to be joining this conversation with you, Denisha. I think it's going to be a really interesting discussion. I'm really passionate about children's rights and making sure that we take a rights-based approach to every aspect of children's lives. And I think particularly when we're talking about something like bereavement and the experience that children have throughout their lives and how that impacts on your experience throughout adulthood is something I'm really passionate about. And so I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
Hi, I'm Denisha. I'm the lead of the National Childhood Bereavement Project. It's my job to look at how bereavement services work all across Scotland. And we're looking at every single bereavement in a person's life. So we're not limiting it by relationship. It's really, what's that bond to that person? Is it their friend? Is it their partner? Is it their parent? Is it their social worker? And I'm really, really excited to be able to do this today with Bruce because I think Bruce is amazing. He's really good at what he does. And obviously with bereavement and grief, it's so important to take a rights-based perspective at that because children and people need to have a voice and to be heard and to be meaningfully considered when we're talking about the bereavement process. I think for my sort of role, I think it's really important that we do take a rights-based perspective, and there's nobody better to do this than Bruce. Me and Bruce worked together at the Care Review. I was the stigma co-chair, Bruce was the rights co-chair, and there's a lot of crossover between our work there, so it's really nice to have the same crossover again and to be able to really see how we can align it. With my project, we'll be reporting to government next year, and it really aligns quite well with the UNCRC coming into Scots law, so it's a really great time to have this conversation.
And I'm really glad that you mentioned the independent care review, Denisha, and it was amazing working with you and the incredible work that you and the group that we're looking at Stigma did, and how all of the different groups of the independent care review worked so closely together. And I think that's a really important part of this conversation is that you can't break off different aspects of childhood or life. Kind of rights and experience are all totally, totally interlinked. And so that rights-based approach is really totally key. And that's the way in which the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child works as well, is that it brings together all the different things that people in power need to do in order to ensure that children are able to thrive. And so it starts off with this idea of every child should grow up in a family environment of happiness, love, and understanding, and puts in place all the different things that the state and those in power need to do to make sure that children get what they need. And one of the really important things, I think, when we're talking about bereavement is that recognition that it's really complex, that all families are different, all experiences of loss and of grief are different, and the kind of rights interactions are really complex because this cuts through everything. It cuts through your kind of respect for family life, your privacy at times, your identity, how you're able to then relate to education, all of these different things. And again, the really profound effects on things like mental health as well. So I think it's a subject that I'm so pleased that they created your position, Denisha, and the fact that you were appointed to that position because you're absolutely amazing, but also because you've got this really good understanding of that idea that you've got to be able to link all the different things together, and particularly the ability to, as you did with the stigma work and the independent care review, really get people to be able to have some kind of safe space to actually discuss things that were often really uncomfortable discussing. And death is something that we have a lot of difficulty discussing, and the experience of death and how we it's something we really struggle with. And so taking a rights-based approach to that is absolutely key. And so the work that you're doing at the moment is really, really exciting. You must have had some incredible conversations, particularly in the middle of COVID. So suddenly your work's changed to being online. But you must have had some incredible conversations since you've been in this post.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think what you were saying there about there's not really any right way to grieve, I think that's really important as well. But the conversation that I've had, it's quite weird how I've had conversations with children from all ages, young people, and also adults that did experience childhood grief and now reflecting on that sort of part of their lives. And the same thing always comes up is that when it happens, if you're a young person, nobody wants to talk to you about it. And it really deepens that sense of grief because you feel like you don't have an outlet. And I think that's really interesting from a rights-based perspective, because actually children should have the right to be able to talk about that and feel like they're part of the process. We know very often that children, young people are sometimes sheltered from funeral arrangements, all these sorts of things. And actually what that does is it makes them feel like they don't have a say over it. I've had a lot of really interesting conversations actually with people that maybe in their 20s now, but they had experienced a bereavement of someone close to them when, say, they were like under 5. And people just kind of, when they're growing up, assumed that it wouldn't affect them because they were so young. But actually what we know with grief is the biggest thing, the impact of grief is that you grieve the loss of relationship more than anything. So you grow up through all these milestones and you don't have, say, it's a parent, you don't have that parent there. You might not remember who the person was entirely, but then you still grieve the loss of that relationship no matter how young you were when it happened. And I think that's the thing that's came up the most across every conversation, is that sort of idea that young people don't have that outlet to be able to express their feelings around it, to be able to remember that person, to be encouraged to really reflect on that as well. And it feels almost like it's quite compartmentalized as well. So at the independent care review, that was a big thing. Our big crossover there was that we were talking about stigma, but we weren't just looking at stigma for care, we're looking at stigma for absolutely everyone. We did a big bit of work around LGBT, people of colour, different religions, we did a lot of different things. We looked at poverty, we looked at class, we did all these sorts of intersectionality just to look to see how it cuts across everything. And I think bereavement's the exact same. I don't think that we can say that, oh, bereavement happens in isolation and that it's only for a fixed period of life, because you carry it with you through until the day you die as well, no matter what, when that happens. And I think that's so important, that death is the one given in life. And actually, if we don't adequately prepare, particularly young people, on how to understand death and how to grieve, they'll always kind of grow up feeling quite robbed of that experience of not knowing how to express themselves and not knowing how to channel their emotions.
Absolutely. And what you were saying earlier as well about this idea that in rights terms, children of all ages have the right to be part of decision making, to have their views heard on things that affect them. And that's really important. There's also the right to have decisions made in your best interest. And I think sometimes adults see that kind of best interest protection thing as being in conflict with participation, saying we want to make the decision for the best interest of the child. And so we think excluding them from things that might be harmful to talk about is the way to go, rather than, and that's the wrong way of looking at it, because you can't make a decision in the best interest of the child until you've gotten their view and understand what they want and their experience. And so actually the right to have decisions made in your best interest and the right to participate, that they don't conflict, they actually work together. And I think that's something that's misunderstood, particularly around something like bereavement. So when someone you love dies, it's really important that the people around you are talking to you about it and supporting you. And that really good point you made, Denisha, about being part and as far as possible about some of the decision makings, how you want to mark the loss of that person, how you want to remember them, all of that stuff are conversations we need to be having with children of all ages. And that's something that comes up so clearly, that if we use making decisions in children's best interest to exclude them from decision making, that's not in their best interest. And I think that's really important. And I think that we can learn a lot from other countries and other cultures that maybe aren't as prominent in Scotland, who have really different approaches to death. And I'm from New Zealand, as people may pick up from my accent, which I still have even after 20 years of living in Scotland. But in New Zealand, particularly in the indigenous Maori culture, there's a very different approach to death. And tangis, the traditional funerals, take place over days, and the whole community comes together and remembers the person, and the kind of the spiritual element of them still being part of the community and remembering people is really interweaved in kind of everyday life. And there isn't the same kind of stigma around death, or that death's some kind of some finality of it that you have to kind of mark that and then they're gone. It's much more of a community thing. It's much more of kind of something that people try and breathe positivity into, and kind of marking and remembering the person in a really positive way. But if you're ever at a tangi in New Zealand, you'll hear laughter and you'll hear a lot of singing, and there'll be a lot of food involved. And again, these are things that I think take place in lots of different cultures, that kind of food and song and things. But that celebratory aspect, I think is really important for children to be part of that as well. Because again, connection to your identities, right? Connection to your culture, understanding relationships. These are really fundamental rights principles, because they speak to identity and understanding who you are. And I think that that's really essential, that we involve children of all ages in all aspects of that process. I think the conversations and that you're starting to build up, Tanisha, through the work that you're doing, and kind of bringing sort of different voices together, I think is really interesting, because I think that's got to be the key to it. And that's the key to a rights-based approach, is that kind of empowering people to be involved, but ensuring that it's built within in a process of participation.
Yeah, I think exactly what you said there, Bruce, as well. I think it's almost that element of storytelling that's so important when you're growing up. Your identity, your culture, is how you tell the stories about your life and how you understand the stories in your life as well. And I think that's so key. That's something that in your role you do so well, Bruce, to be able to make sure that participation is so meaningful to that young person. And also the independent care review, you really try to have that storytelling that wasn't in a way that was tokenistic or sensationalising separate experiences. It's really about how can we create something that's meaningful and speaks for every child, but no child in particular as well. And I think that's something that's so key about how we can make sure that we do learn from different perspectives. I love when you always say about that. It was a conversation we had last year. You were talking about New Zealand and how actually it's so different in terms of how they celebrate life. And I think that's incredible, because we do have a sort of culture in Scotland of death isn't something to be talked about. And I think that's what it makes really interesting in a pandemic, because we go into TV every single day and it's how many deaths there are. And it's kind of changed the way that we think about it, because it's all around us now. You can't really escape it. And I think that's it's an opportunity to be able to see how we can start to integrate, well, no, we should talk about death, we should talk about mental health, we should talk about grief, we should really understand that we're all having a collective grief right now, regardless of it's to do with a loved one dying during the pandemic. We're all grieving for loss of our normality in life. And I think that really opens up the conversation of, well, actually, this is something that affects us all, so how can we prepare people? And I think it goes beyond just saying that we need services. We can't just build a wall of services and expect them to work. It actually goes beyond that, and it's how we in communities understand death, dying, bereavement, and how to support someone. So how can we upskill teachers? How can we upskill just members of the community, so that when a bereavement happens, we all know how to come together and create that safe environment for a young person or anyone of any age to just really be like, no, I can speak about this, I can remember that person, I can celebrate it if it's something that I want to celebrate, but I can also be upset about it and I feel valid in any of my feelings. And I think that's what doesn't happen enough right now. There is a sort of stigma around how we can grieve and remember someone in the way that we want to, because it's almost like it's swept under the carpet, it should be spoken about. So I really love hearing about different cultures and different nationalities around the world that do have that process of celebration, because I think it would be quite like a nice thing to be able to have in Scotland in particular, and feel like, well, it's okay to talk about. I think certainly the young people that I've spoken to, it really is that sense of you can't there isn't an outlet to speak about it. You don't want to, but mainly because you don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable. It isn't about you feeling like, oh, I don't talk about it because it makes me upset. 9 times out of 10, it's actually because the people around you, if you mention someone that has died, they feel really uncomfortable, they don't know what to say. And it's actually that fear that prevents people from being able to support other people. That if we actually collectively came over that fear and knew, actually, it's not about saying the right thing, it's just about hearing someone out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important about the time, making the time available, making the space available, allowing children of all ages, but adults as well, to be able to express their emotion. And again, that all of the emotion that comes along with loss and grief and bereavement, the anger that's there, the pain, the sorrow, the regret, all of the emotions that we maybe kind of say are kind of are negative, but they need to be able to be expressed in kind of a safe way. And I think that the important one of the many important points that you're making around supporting professionals, and so how do we support teachers to be able to know how to make that space available for children as they're coming back into school? How across everyone, across society, do we kind of build up the skills and the tools to make sure that people have got the space around it? And one of the big things, I suppose, cultural differences in New Zealand, particularly within Māori culture in New Zealand, because this is such a kind of big community thing going through bereavement and loss, time's made available. So tangi takes place over days and days, and kind of people stay on the marae, or you stay in a kind of hall or whatever. And people stay over, and it's not kind of a festival atmosphere, but it is kind of a festival atmosphere, and that you're together for quite a long period in the context of some of the bereavement loss that's happened over the last year, and because there's been restrictions on the way in which we do things. And so in New Zealand, the same types of things, that restrictions on numbers that happened last year. And so that's something that I think that the loss that we're all feeling and the change that we're all feeling during COVID, also when it comes to bereavement and so many more people have died, and so many more people are bereaved, but also the way in which we mark the passing of people's changed because there's been restrictions. So that's been really difficult. We've had family funerals here, and it's been really difficult not being able to create that time and space to be together. And I think that we need to be really focused on that time's a really important element of allowing that time and space to go through those emotions and creating that really safe space, particularly because I'm focused on this role on children and young people, but particularly for children and young people, just making them feel safe enough to express their emotions. And that takes time and support to be around them.
Yeah, completely. I think it's so interesting to hear sort of differences in the life rituals between obviously like New Zealand and Scotland. I think there is a massive sense of what we've heard, particularly from people working to provide services. What they've said has been that there was sort of an assumption at the start of the pandemic that because children and young people are more technology, like they're the generation that like know all about technology, they prefer that they thought putting everything online would actually be more beneficial. But actually they've seen the complete opposite happen. It's been young people that have already engaged in a service that are coming back more likely, but new referrals aren't coming through. So there's a sense that there's a lot of people holding on to their grief because they think, well, at the start they thought, well, it'll be over in a month, when actually they've been holding on to it for almost about over a year now. And there is that sense that people are holding on to their grief because they can't do those sorts of end of life rituals. There's limits on funerals, there's limits on seeing family members, the restrictions are making it really hard to understand when you can grieve. And there is that massive sense of when is that wave going to hit. And I think it's important, exactly what you said, Bruce, it's time. We need to make sure that we have that time and that space, that when people are starting to really feel the effects of grief and that's catching up with them, that it isn't just a case of them feeling like they've got to keep holding on to it. There is that ability for them to feel like they can find the people, they can feel like they can have that support. And I think that's really important. When you were talking about your uncle's sort of funeral, that is really, really interesting to hear, because it should be about the ability to be able to laugh, but also feel like if you need to cry, that's fine as well. I don't think that is sort of similar in Scotland. I feel like it is. I think back to my mum's funeral when I was 14, and it was so, it was really, really like such, you felt like you had to be sad, and I felt like it was quite difficult. There's so much pressure on on you and like the family to really be grieving. And like I find it now, 8 years later, I find the most helpful thing to remember my mum is to laugh and remember all like the silly little things that she did, like, and get a laugh out of that way. Like, I find that's the most comforting thing for me. But then at the time, it took me like a long time to be able to get to a position in my life where I feel like that's okay to grieve my mum, because there's such a culture, a stigma around death that I think it has to be such a sad thing that isn't spoken about. Whereas actually for me, I'm quite humorous, so I quite like to remember like really silly little things about my mum, like that she would be out doing washing at like 3 a.m. and I'd be like, why are you doing that? Like, just because she wanted to, if it was going to be a clear sky tomorrow, she really wanted to make the most of it. Like, I like to remember stuff like that, not the process of her dying, because I feel like that is something that should be celebrated, the life that she had. And I think that's something in particular that COVID has made even harder, because you can't bounce off, sort of like you were saying, you're speaking to your mum, you can't bounce off your family members in the same way that you probably could in not non-COVID times, because the restrictions, and you're not able to have that release. So I think it's really important to be able to, coming out of the pandemic in particular, that we create a space for children, young people, that when they go back to school, when they have time with their friends or families, that they understand if they have experienced bereavement or they're grieving in any sense, it's okay to be able to express that in any way that's possible for them. And I think that's the conversation around society and culture more general, of how we can create that sort of way of thinking, that we can move beyond thinking that death is something that always has to be sad or never spoken about to protect children and young people, but actually how can we work around and with children and young people to make sure their participation around this sort of topic is in a way that's meaningful to them.
I think that's so important, and I think the broader stuff around mental health and COVID is the biggest human rights issue probably that we're going to need to focus on over the next few years, in terms of all of that stuff needs to come out. It's not going to suddenly go away when restrictions come off. It's like we're still carrying a lot of that, and particularly for children and young people that have had loved ones die and kind of going through that bereavement process. Yeah, we need to pay really careful attention to mental health supports in all settings. And even some of those simple things that you talked about, like the fact that we can't hug each other. I mean kind of that kind of physical contact, and that's one of the things when you're wanting to kind of console someone is hugging such a big kind of thing. And then we haven't been able to give people that kind of physical comfort and kind of something as simple as a hug or an arm around a shoulder. We've told each other that's dangerous over the last, and we've sent that message really clearly to children and young people that kind of being around other people is dangerous. And we need to really unpack that, because that kind of support is so important. And I think that the kind of understanding that every family is different and every loss is different. Again, that I talked about my uncle, but actually kind of earlier than that, when I was much younger, my older brother died, and we were very, very close. And that's been one of the things that's probably impacted me more than anything else. But perhaps because he was so young when he died, it wasn't that same kind of big kind of celebration. My uncle had lived a very full and big life, and so it was a kind of a big community thing. When my brother died, it wasn't like that. There was so much kind of shock. There was so much kind of pain going on that it did feel very, very difficult to for people to connect to those kind of happy memories and the kind of laughing. There wasn't that laughter, because it was so painful for the family and the wider community to lose a small child. And I think that took a very long time, and it's an ongoing process about being able to kind of to be not happy, but to kind of celebrate the life and to laugh about it and to enjoy and reflect back on those memories. And I think that's really important as well, is recognizing that bereavement and loss is different, and it's always different, because families are different, people are different, and sometimes it might be quite easy to kind of tap into maybe someone who'd had a very kind of long kind of full life, and there's lots and lots of memories and maybe there's lots of stories and things. As opposed to maybe losing someone suddenly and in a really difficult circumstance. And I think that's really important as well, is that we can't expect children or adults to react in the same way or in the same time frame. And so it is about creating that space. And as we come out of COVID, that's going to be the most important thing, I think, is creating those spaces for people to have that experience about whenever that loss happens, And recognizing that there's been lots of additional death and bereavement during COVID, but bereavement lasts kind of a long time. And so children who were already experiencing bereavement, but then have had COVID on top of it, we still need to make sure that support's available for as long as people need it.
I totally agree. I think you've made so many great points there. And it's reminded me of a conversation I had with a session with young people. And there was this quote that someone said that's just stuck in my head ever since. And it's, with grief, we're all in the same storm, but we aren't all in the same boat. And I love that, because I think it's so true. Whenever you do experience a bereavement and you're grieving, people can relate to grief, but it's so, so different for everyone. It's okay to laugh, it's okay to cry, it's okay to feel nothing as well. Like it's such a big process that comes in waves, and you'll never feel the same as anyone else. You'll never feel the same. You'll never feel the exact same in different points. It's something that you learn to live with. You don't ever get over it. It's something you learn to live with. And I think that's really important, and how we can go forward and make sure that we create an environment where we support every single person through their process and their journey of grief in a way that they feel able to speak about it, but they also feel able to process it themselves. I think that's so important. It's just creating that environment where we feel able to talk about it, even if it's hard, because we know it's so much better to talk about it than keep it bottled up. And I just think that's the most important thing that we can go forward and take as a lesson to us all, that COVID really was the time where we realised how much we care about people in our lives. And I think going forward, we need to do everything that we can to make sure that we are checking in with people a little bit more and creating that safe space that anyone can talk to you if you need it. And I think that's particularly relevant for children and young people that have had so much of their lives and development stages taken away from them. They need even more support going forward now.
That's amazing. I think that's the manifesto for what we need to do, and kind of using different ways and some of the creative stuff as well. I think again, there's some really brilliant cartoons and things that have been used. There's creative stuff, and I think that children and young people are brilliant at helping us with some of that stuff, and that it doesn't necessarily just have to be sitting and talking. It can be all of these different things. But I think what you'd set out just then, Denisha, about what we need to do, that's what we need everyone focused on. I think that's us. I think we're out of time, but it's been brilliant to talk to you as always, Denisha. And I think that we need to keep working together as a community to lift some of the taboos around this and really focus, as you've just set out really clearly, about creating that space.
Yeah, completely agree. Thank you so much, Bruce. It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. See ya.
Thank you ever so much for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to learn more about our work, please visit www.childrensparliament.org.uk.